This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, Guy James with you. So glad to have you along with us this afternoon here at the Guy James Show. My goodness, we've got the volume turned up loud here today. Better turn, there we go, that's a little bit better. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are today. It's a gorgeous day in Southwest Florida, as it usually is. And we're going to have a good show for you today. A little later on, we've got Paul Waldman from MediaMatters.org. Most of you know about David Brock's MediaMatters.org, and we're going to talk about all this good news that George Bush has been bragging about. That's right, we're going to talk about that, and quite a few things we got going on today. Bushy boys, blaming it all on the media. It's not Bushy's fault. None of this is Bushy's fault. It's all the media's fault, and my God. You know, I get the Republican talking points every morning, and you can see this onslaught coming, and we could certainly see this one coming this week, around Tuesday. I sent it all out, Ken Melman and the RNC and everything, going to blame the media. Not going to accept any blame. Mr. Bush's administration is not going to accept any blame. The Republican Congress is not going to accept any blame. Everything is the fault of the media. So they're going to bang that drum real hard today and all week long and for as long as they can get away with it. Paul Waldman from Media Matters, we're going to talk about that particular issue when it's time to talk to him. We're going to talk to him sometime within this hour. So be sure and stay tuned for that. We're going to have a lot of interesting things to say about that. And I bet you do too. Love to have you call us, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We hope you give us a call today. We'd love to hear your comments. As we always say, it is a talk show, and we'd like to hear from you as well. So don't be shy. Give us a call, each and every one of you. We do want to hear from you. So here we go. Here we go again. Another campaign by the Bushes to take the blame, take the responsibility, the culpability, whatever, to take it away from them. Turn the eye on somebody else. Try and get the public once again to say, hey, don't look at me. Look over there. It's their fault. And now they're going to blame the one they love to blame the most, the media. All of this is the media fault. Even our guys and gals are dying over there on account of the media. Yeah, that's right. You didn't know that, did you? Well, you know, we've got American combat deaths in Iraq climbing to over 2,300 now. I forget the exact number, 2,352, something like that. Yet the president and his supporters have never accepted his responsibility. Rather, they have a mantra that says it's the media's fault. You know, we even had Pils Limbaugh's brother a while back write an article that complained that Democrats and the media have successfully created the perception that Iraq has been a disaster, which naturally is the reason popular backing for the war is dropping off now. A disaster? Limbaugh, what else can you call it? You know, for more than a year, Bush's cronies have been circulating emails reporting the good news that you're not hearing about Iraq. The good news you're not hearing about Iraq. And I heard Laura Ingraham, bless her little right-wing, radical right-wing heart, this morning talking about, oh, I was in Iraq, and I saw something completely different than I see on the news every night. I guess if I'm going to talk like Laura Ingraham, I better lower my voice a little bit. Anyway, yeah, she's talking about how the other news media report from the balconies of their hotel, and she went and got the facts for us. Wasn't that nice? Certainly. So they're sending these emails around and telling them the good news and trying to convince each other, citing the dredging of harbors and the creation of regulatory agencies in Iraq and the opening of schools. And never mind the deaths of Americans every day. There were more important things happening over there. The failure to understand why the American people have turned against the war demonstrates that this administration and its allies are well, they're simultaneously arrogant and tone-deaf. You know, while conservatives routinely denounced Clinton, President Clinton, for failing to accept responsibility for his picadillos, the GOP is now taking the cult, the actual cult of the victim, to new heights here. Why does the majority of Americans, many of them conservative and tending to vote Republican, why do they criticize the war? You know, you can start out with the fact that the war absolutely, positively, without any question, was based on a falsehood. How could you even argue with that? It wasn't a media creation that the administration painted Saddam Hussein as a modern Hitler, ready to you know, devastate the U.S. from the president on down. Spoke of mushroom clouds, millions at risk from bioterrorism, these unmanned aerial vehicles that could hit America, and so on and so on and so on. You remember the quote, if we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, then we shouldn't wait to attack, said the president. You know, none of those charges were true. The administration's failure to back up its absolutely spurious claims wasn't due to the media. And despite the most disastrous intelligence failure in decades, the president, he didn't take any action. He accepted no responsibility. He held no officials accountable. He announced no review of intelligence procedures that I know of. Instead, Vice President Dick Cheney continued and continues to this day to suggest that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11, a charge for which there was never any evidence. You know, once having conquered Iraq, the administration proceeded to bungle virtually every major decision. It wasn't the media's fault that officials falsely promised that Iraqis would shower U.S. troops with rose petals and the occupation would pay for itself, that the garrison would fall to 30,000 by last summer and the Allies would fall over themselves to join in this victorious bandwagon we were going to have. And, you know, Cheney, to quote Cheney, once we have a victory in Baghdad, all the critics will look like fools, Cheney said. Well, not quite, Mr. Vice President, not quite. The people that didn't want to join in this war are the ones that are looking like they knew what was happening. Our administration are the ones that look like fools. You know, journalists understandably concentrated on how Iraq's problems affected the U.S., and there was positive news. Of course there was positive news, but far more important was the negative fact that a majority of Iraqis disliked Washington. They wanted the Americans to go home. They still want them to go home, and some of them even justified attacks on U.S. forces just to get us the hell out of their country. You know, it'd be nice if Iraqis were grateful to Americans for their liberation, but the majority of them aren't. There are polls taken to indicate that, and yet we've got Laura Ingraham and Limbaugh and the like claiming that all the Iraqis love us. Bullshit. You know, nor can a journalist be blamed for the fact that the administration's overly optimistic predictions of future progress always went unfulfilled. Always. First, you know, the death of Hussein's sons, that was going to be the turning point. And once Saddam was captured, all was going to be well, we were told. And then the economic progress was going to change things. And finally, when we transferred sovereignty over to them, oh, yes, that was going to be wonderful. Yet more American troops died after that than before. And the story just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. There's an administration's reliance on Iraqi exile, remember Shalabi? Oh, yes. Ahmed Shalabi, whose Iraqi National Congress helped lie America right into war. And then that was followed by the administration's abandonment of Shalabi in the midst of charges that he actually spied for Iran. That wasn't the media's fault. That story wasn't. And, you know, despite the administration's ridiculous rhetoric about democracy, the government of Alawi every day looks more authoritarian than liberal, like a housebroken Saddam Hussein. You know, none of this was the press's fault. They're reporting what's actually happened over there. No place in Iraq is safe except for a few, you know, green zones. Christians are being brutalized, and Christian churches are being bombed, and, you know, 40,000 Christians have fled on over to Syria, which is really an ugly anti-American dictatorship, and journalists aren't to blame for that. And finally, after a year of building fantasies in the sky, the administration has become, a little bit more circumspect, I guess you'd say. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice said Americans should be more patient and less critical of every twist and turn. After all, she said, not everything has gone as we would have liked it to. Well, isn't that just dandy? You know, to put it very mildly, the administration's record of hysterically high hopes and tragically poor performance, that's not a media problem. The media didn't create that. And the failure is not only in Iraq. You know, by shifting the attention and the resources to Iraq, the administration also shortchanged operations in Afghanistan, which, as we spoke about yesterday, is deteriorating as we speak. The war in Iraq has spurred recruiting for terrorist groups around the world. Even Al-Qaeda, badly damaged by America's assault in Afghanistan. They're rebounding. So, you know, the recent alert involving financial institutions and the Pentagon's abortive plan to close down its child care operations for safety reasons. Jesus. You know, that's not the fault of the media. It's true. I know it's true that journalists trend to be left, but that's hardly news. And it doesn't explain the declining support for this war. You know, and critical coverage of ongoing violence in Iraq dropped off after the formal transfer in sovereignty. It did. But, you know, I read a story a while back in the Weekly Standard where the writer, I can't think of his name right now, but he admitted that if the war's not going quite as you'd like it to go, that doesn't mean that the liberal media is thumbing the scale. But, oh, it's the media's fault, said Bush supporters, about all these public, the public increase in the doubts on the war. But the media had done nothing more than report on administration policies. It's the president who's at fault. The buck stops in the Oval Office. I wish somebody would admit that nowadays. He shouldn't have gone to war. His administration bungled the peace. His officials denied all responsibility for this resulting mess. And now it's the media's fault? Are you buying that? My God, I hope not. I hope nobody with a brain buys that. We're going to talk about it a little later with Paul Waldman of Media Matters. And you know, that brings up a point I want to make. Here we have, on the one hand, the entire right-wing machine. All the right-wing mouthpieces on the radio and on TV and every place that they are across this country, they're all parroting the same line right now. It's the media's fault. They're not reporting the good news. All we're getting is the bad news. Let me read you just a little note here. On February the 28th, the Bush administration, now mind you, they're criticizing the media for not giving us the good news. On February 28th, the Bush administration announced it would not be providing any significant funding for Iraqi reconstruction projects, any additional funding for Iraqi reconstruction project, with the exception of prisons. Daniel Speckard, the head of the U.S.-led program to rebuild Iraq, told the Iraqi government that it, quote, can no longer count on U.S. funds and must rely on its own revenues and other foreign aid, unquote. So here we have the United States turning its back on Iraq's reconstruction while leaving behind a legacy of waste, mismanagement, misplaced priority. You know, and to quote, there was insufficient systematic planning for human capital management in Iraq before and during the U.S.-directed stabilization and reconstruction operations, noted Iraq's Special Inspector General Stuart Bowen. Of the 136 water projects first envisioned, only 49 will be completed. And only 300 of the 425 electrical projects will be completed. Anthony Kordsman at the Center of Strategic and International Studies called the U.S. reconstruction effort a dismal failure. It hasn't met any of its goal. It left a legacy of half-built projects built to U.S. standards, which Iraq doesn't have the capability to maintain. So on the one hand, here we have all of the right-wingers out, the administration and all of their toadies, all of the talk show people. Even I saw him had a soldier and his wife on last night telling him, that, oh, it's so much better over there than you're hearing on TV, when I've heard reporters say it's actually much worse than you're seeing it on TV. But all of that, and then we find out we're cutting back on the funding of the reconstruction. Nice, huh? Very, very nice. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Say, are you a conservative Republican who believes George Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all of that, then you will certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and Social Security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the President's war, you are a super patriot and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the President uttering those famous words, "Bring 'em on." Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
Find you an informant, you will find you any gun. It's not there in secrecy, it's not in our strategy. I ain't got to justify V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. I'm living in a rogue nation. I'm living in a rogue nation. Plant your dreams in foreign soil. Pump some lead, then pump some oil. Fill up every tank and plane. Find a reason to start again. I ain't got to justify V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. I'm living in a rogue nation. I'm living in a rogue nation. Celebration, our heroic occupation. Missiles flying, rising high. Rain down freedom from the sky.
I'm living in a rogue nation, and you know that's where we're. That's how we're looked at around the country, around the world right now. We certainly are. And to prove that point, I want to give you, I want to read a little bit from a nice letter I got from Patrick from Scotland. And, you know, this was a very beloved country around the world. People loved our nation, and it pains me that we're not thought of in that regard anymore. I wonder why. And Patrick in Scotland tells me, I hope America can solve its major problem. I think it all starts with the getting rid of the voting machines. Otherwise, the Republicans will be in power forever. Brother, you got that right. He goes on to say, I can't even be... This is a part that should pain every last American. It should cause you pain to hear this. It should bring a tear to your eye. He said, I can't even begin to tell you how the image of the USA is down the toilet here in Europe. American, the word American, has become an insult, and it's instantly associated with illegal wars and torture, and that's really a shame. I'm awfully glad to get letters, but I'm awfully sorry that people are able to put content like that in it, because it's true. Oh, it's true, all right. That makes me feel bad about my country. It really, really does. You know, I'd like to hear from you. If you're out there listening, you think this is a bum rap, if you think that really and truly the media is responsible for this, I'd like to hear somebody justify that. If you think the media is the main problem, that the, well, you know, the one they like to use the most, that the terrorists are being emboldened. They read our newspapers. They watch CNN every day, and they read the headlines, and they, oh, boy. You know, how ridiculous. I'm not saying they don't read the newspapers. I'm not saying they don't watch CNN. They very well might. But they're emboldened by what they read? Jeez, I don't know. I really don't know. It's a mess. It really is. And I just hope someday soon that we can put enough pressure on these people that, well, that they start putting an end to it. Right now, they've got no pressure on them. No pressure whatsoever that I can see. They're not going to admit they're wrong. Not at all. Hey, I'd like to say hello to some folks on the internet out there today. All the folks from Democrats.com, SmirkingChimp.com, DemocratUnderground.com. We got Myrna Minx and Kat Shrink and Liberal Nurse on there right now, and others to join us pretty soon. I would really love to hear from you today, and when our guest comes on, they're going to talk about this media fiasco. And have you seen how some of the media right now are getting real defensive about it? Jack Afferty came on and told the exact truth about it yesterday. And some of the right-wing pundits were just having a good time over him. But, you know, Saturday morning, Bob Schieffer had Darth Vader Cheney on and brought this up. And, you know, I want to read you a question. He said, Mr. Vice President, all along the government has been very optimistic. You remain optimistic. But I remember when you were saying we'd be greeted as liberators. You played down the insurgency. 10 months ago, you said it was in its last throes. Do you believe that these optimistic statements may be one of the reasons that people seem to be more skeptical in this country about whether we ought to be in Iraq? And Darth Vader Cheney says, no. I think it has less to do with statements we've made, which I think were basically accurate. The statements he made were basically accurate about the war. He was wrong on every case. In every case, he was wrong. 100% wrong. We were going to be treated as liberators. We were going to be, you know, and that the insurgency was in its last throes. Basically accurate. But he goes on to say, his statements reflect reality than it does the fact that there's a constant sort of perception, if you will, that's created because what's newsworthy is the car bomb in Baghdad. It's not all the work that went on that day in 15 other provinces in terms of making progress toward rebuilding Iraq. The facts are pretty straightforward, he says. Well, I'll just agree with that. The facts pretty much are straightforward. Sure, there's a little bit of good news in Iraq now and then. We built a school here and there. We got a new water system going here and there. We still don't have them back to the levels that they were at before the war. We still don't have the power structure back up to where it was, the utilities and all, back to where it was before the war. And then we find out that they're cutting funding. They're cutting funding for the reconstruction projects. And yet we've got guys like Cheney on telling us how good things are. That's one of those things, I'm going to piss on your boots and tell you it's raining. And you're going to believe it. And obviously, about slightly more than 30% of the American public does believe it. 32, 34, depending on which poll you look at. Nothing higher than about 34, I think, right now. Of course, Cheney's popularity is down in the 20s or high teens. Even Republicans see through that rat. I don't know when I've ever seen a more despicable character in the United States government than Dick Cheney. I can't think of one. I look back a long, long way, and I can't see a more despicable one. And Ryan says he can.
Yes, George Sr. when he was vice president.
More despicable than Dick Cheney?
Yeah, I think so. Personal standpoint.
I think he's in a different league altogether. I don't think there's ever been anybody as bad as in our government. I don't think there's ever been a nastier piece of work than Dick Cheney. Absolutely, this is the worst man I think's ever been in our government. Don't admire him very much, as you can tell. And oddly enough, most Republicans don't admire the man either. Picked himself to be vice president. Bush was dumb enough to let him. Of course, Bush was following the rules from his PNAC friends, so I guess he probably had to take, in order to be president, he probably had to accept Cheney as his vice president. That's the way it seems to work. But not real proud of Dick Cheney. That's a fact. I just don't know when there's going to be anybody take care of the situation with these guys. I really don't. We're going to have, in just a moment or so, we're going to have Paul Waldman on with us. Are we taking care of that situation, Ryan? Okay, I think we got Paul on with us now. We've got Paul Waldman, senior contributor at of course, he has his blog, The Gadflyer. And also at MediaMatters.com. Paul, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, glad to have you along with us today at the Guy James Show. We were discussing, we got a little static in the lines here. We were discussing the fact that we have, that static is loud too, I apologize for that. We'll try and straighten that out. We're discussing the fact that the Bush people and the RNC and everybody else with any Republican tag on them right now seem to be blaming the media for everything that's wrong in Iraq and blaming the media for everything except the rain. They've got a concentrated effort going on this week, a very concentrated effort, and just want to make the public believe that they're not at fault for anything. Going to shift it all over to the media, and I know MediaMatters.org, of which you are a big part, is exposing this big lie. But how successful do you think they'll be with getting it across to the public?
Well, I think they'll be fairly successful with their base. I mean, this is not a completely new argument. They've said this before. But what's new is the kind of unity that it's getting. And I think that it's because Bush came out in his press conference and made this argument. And so immediately the entire right wing sort of took it as their cue that this is now kind of the line of the day. And they're going to keep repeating it. So Bush, it wasn't just Bush himself. Of course, Dick Cheney made that argument when he did an interview on Face the Nation. And then you see this whole kind of cascade of conservative commentators all making the same claim, that it's not that things are going badly in Iraq, but that the media are somehow, basically inventing the idea that that there's a civil war going on, that people are getting killed, that there's, unrest and chaos and violence, that this is somehow all an invention of the media because they're not covering the opening of schools and the laying of sewage trains. So I think that this is something that conservatives are often very effective at. It's when a particular line of argument comes down from the White House, everybody on their team kind of falls right into line and begins to repeat that argument over and over and over. Now, you asked if it was going to be successful. I think that its chances for success are limited. It will certainly resonate with their base because they already believe it. They've been conditioned over the years to kind of blame the media for everything. Whenever things aren't going well for conservatives, it must be because the media are setting out to undermine them. But unfortunately for them, the rest of the public sees what they see on the news every day, and they know that things are not going well in Iraq.
Well, on that Face the Nation on Sunday morning with Bob Schieffer, anyway, Schieffer asked him that question about things going bad in Iraq, and Cheney actually made the statement. I think it's got less to do with statements we've made, which I think were basically accurate. And it's fascinating to me that he even could make a statement like that. That his statements about the war, pre-war and afterwards, have been accurate. I don't think anything Dick Cheney said about it has been accurate.
No, and Cheney has kind of a unique talent for this kind of deception. At different points particularly during the whole Iraq question, the administration has been trying to push a line that is really not accurate. But there's a difference in how Dick Cheney talks about it. You know, when President Bush wanted to convince people that Saddam Hussein might have been involved in September 11th, he knew it wasn't true, so he felt like he couldn't say it directly. So he would, put the words September 11th and Saddam Hussein in the same sentence or the same paragraph and kind of set up that association. But Dick Cheney would actually come out and say, we don't know. We think that Mohammed Atta met with Iraqi intelligence in Prague when they knew that was false. When they wanted to convince people that Saddam might have nuclear weapons, they would be couched in hypothetical terms when Bush talked about it. But Cheney once actually blurted out, we know that Saddam Hussein has reconstituted his nuclear program, even though that wasn't true. And so you see over and over again how Cheney is the one who comes out and says the absolutely false thing that the administration is trying to convince us of. And so it's completely within character for him to come out to say to Bob Schieffer, everything that I said was accurate.
Well, it never ceases to amaze me that any thinking person, anybody that keeps up with the news at all, can believe these statements. But obviously, they know there's a certain base there that's going to stick with them no matter what they say and how many times they say it. Even Bill O'Reilly's in on it now. Laura Ingraham this morning, I heard some of her program statements that she's made this morning. They're on an all-out quest to vilify the media and switch the blame over to them. There's no doubt about it. Ken Melman, all of them, they're really after it. And I just hope and pray the American public is smart enough, although it appears that about 30% of them aren't smart enough to figure out what's going on here.
Well, the size of that base on which the White House has been able to count is getting smaller and smaller with each passing day. And that's kind of the real story about his declining approval ratings. He lost almost all the Democrats a long time ago, and he's already lost most of the independents. But what's different now, as things really get bad for the White House, is that numbers of Republicans are beginning to peel away. He still has most Republicans in his camp, but it's the difference between having an approval rating that's in the 40s and having an approval rating that's in the 30s. He's beginning to lose some of those moderate Republicans who see what the White House is saying every day and see their record and say that, I can't support this president anymore. So it's not there certainly is a substantial number of people, maybe it's 30% or so of the public, who are never going to turn away from George W. Bush no matter what he does. But there are lots of Republicans who are ready to be persuaded against him, and that's starting to happen, and that's what has them more nervous than anything.
It's very apparent that they're absolutely petrified about the upcoming midterm elections. It appears that the Democrats, if they run a smart campaign, if they do, I say that a big if the Democrats run a smart campaign this time around, that they could actually unseat them from the House at least. And I think, there are different studies that show that's entirely possible this year. The Senate might be a little tougher job, but the House looks like it can be done. But Democrats are going to have to run a smarter campaign than they have been running over the past few years, and I certainly hope so anyway. But the deceitfulness of these people out blaming this on the media now, and I just were telling my listeners about a story on February 28th where the Bush administration announced it wasn't going to be providing any significant additional funding for Iraqi reconstruction projects except for prisons. They haven't finished hardly any of their projects over there, and yet everything's the fault of the media that we should be out promoting all the good news that's going on in Iraq when they say themselves they're going to cut back on spending, so there won't be as much good news as there ought to be.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's only so much that so many times you can tell the public that things are going well and that, you know, there's this hidden story of how terrific everything is and how thankful the Iraqi people are. There's only so many times you can tell that to people before they just stop believing you. Even people who you know, may be favorably inclined or like the president personally, you know, when what you're saying is so at odds with reality, it really takes a strenuous effort on the part of the public to believe what you're saying. And I think they've passed that point. And, you know, Bush is out making these speeches, and it's, you know, he hasn't changed what he said about Iraq in a couple of years. It's essentially the same speech he gives over and over and over. And there are contexts in which that can be effective. You know, when he was on the campaign trail, the speech that he gave out when he was running for re-election was essentially the same speech every day. And that can be effective when you have, you know, you have an enemy, in that case his opponent, and you have a short amount of time that you're trying to make your case and you're trying to convince people to make an up or down choice between you and somebody else. It was an effective strategy to give that same speech and repeat those talking points every day. But in this kind of a context, when you're trying to convince people that things are really going well and they're seeing something else in the news every day, that going out and just repeating yourself over and over again is going to be less and less effective as time goes on.
I don't think there's anybody more qualified to talk about this subject than you after reading your book, Fraud. I don't know how many people have read it, but Fraud, the strategy behind the Bush lies and why the media didn't tell you, that kind of dovetails into what we're talking about today. Why didn't the media tell him?
You know, I think the answer was different at different times. He's done a very good job of, and his whole team, of really understanding how the press works. And, you know, they have kept the White House press corps, I think, very intimidated. You know, the White House press corps is kind of a strange beast. And they're really captives of the White House. They don't have the opportunity to do a lot of investigation. They basically sit around and wait to be fed the news. And from the beginning, it was made very clear to them that if they put out stories that were too critical, they were going to be blacklisted. There were going to be consequences. And if you're a White House reporter and people in the White House won't talk to you, that makes it almost impossible for you to do your job. And so they were very effective at kind of intimidating reporters. And, you know, they've also understood very well what Bush's image was and how it could be used. You know, for instance, one of the things that I always tell Democrats, don't make fun of Bush for being stupid. Because that's actually exactly what he wants you to do. It's been very effective for him. And this seems counterintuitive, but, you know, reporters long ago, when he first ran for president, decided that he wasn't too bright. But what Bush realized is that could really get him off the hook. When somebody like Al Gore or John Kerry would say something that wasn't true in some kind of factual way, the press would immediately conclude, oh, well, that was a willful deception. They were trying to lie. Why? Because those guys are supposed to be smart, right? But Bush is supposed to be dumb. And what that means is that when he lies, the press doesn't call it a lie. They don't even believe that it was willful. They assume, well, you know, he just made a mistake. Somebody fed him the wrong information. He got tongue-tied. That must be why, you know, why he told us this thing that's blatantly not true. And so that really absolves him of responsibility. And he's used that to his advantage time and time again. You know, whenever he gets caught saying something isn't true, the White House will say things like, oh, well, you know, the president's not a fact-checker. It's not his right. responsibility to get the facts straight. And, you know, the fact is that Bush is not an intellectual. He's not very curious. He has some intellectual weaknesses. He's a very smart political strategist, and he understands how his image can be used to his political advantage.
He's savvy. He's very savvy, politically savvy, I would say. We had Helen Thomas on the program yesterday, and we asked her. She brought up what you just did about the media kind of being handcuffed for a while in this Bush White House, but she said she thinks a few of them are starting to slip the cuffs off right now.
I think so, and that happens in part because his standing is low. You know, when the president is popular, journalists are very reluctant to criticize him. When he becomes unpopular, as this president is right now, they feel more free to go after him. And since so much of their coverage is through that political prism anyway, is he up, is he down, you know, is he going to win this next battle with the Democrats? He will naturally get worse coverage when he's unpopular. But it also makes them feel like they've got a little bit of latitude to go after him. So I think that maybe what we're seeing now is a little bit of turning in that coverage. But, you know, it goes up and down, and we may see in a few months that all of a sudden he starts getting praised the way he used to.
I think you're absolutely right on that. I agree. And except for Helen, I don't think Helen was ever intimidated. she never seemed to be bothered by any of that at all. She's been around too long.
I think you're right.
I don't think has ever felt the slightest bit intimidated. I asked her a question yesterday. Which administration over the nine that she's covered, are there any that she was, did she favor any of them the way they treated the press any better than the other? She said, no, none of them. None of them treated the press well. None of them trusted the press. So, I guess she knows the game full well there. Any more books coming up soon?
Yes, actually. I have a new book coming out in about a month. It's called Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. And what I do in that book is kind of look at the things that conservatives have done right over the last few decades and see what sorts of lessons progressives can learn from that success that conservatives have had. There are a lot of lessons there. There are a lot of things that conservatives have done really well. So hopefully that'll be a book that people can look at and maybe chart some new directions for progressives.
Do you have anything in there about the electronic media? I happen to think that the Republicans and conservatives over the last two decades have done a wonderful job building a base in radio, talk radio, for example. And I think the progressive and the other side of the aisle has done virtually nothing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's really the area where they dominate more than anybody else. I mean, there are hosts like you out there. There are liberal hosts who are being successful. But if you look over the entire landscape, it's incredible just how much conservatives dominate. I mean, if you drive across the country and just keep your radio tuned, what you see is that in every small town there's kind of a Rush Limbaugh wannabe who has this formula that they're following of just insulting Democrats and being sort of vicious to anyone who is anywhere to the left. And it's a reasonably successful formula, and I think that it's this sort of self-perpetuating thing that the program directors of radio stations think that, well, you know, Rush Limbaugh is successful, so that's what we need as a host who is a conservative. That's an area that has been incredibly valuable for them in keeping up that drumbeat of opposition to any kind of progressive policies and keeping up that sort of vitriol aimed at Democratic politicians. The liberals are trying now, and there are some hosts who are being very successful, and there's a growing realization that liberal hosts can get a big audience on radio too. But that's really the area where conservatives have dominated more so than anywhere else.
Is it too late, or do you think we can catch up?
Oh, I don't think it's ever too late. One of the things I try to do whenever I get despondent about some political developments is to look over the course of years and even decades. I mean, I like to say that each one of us is going to live under Democratic presidents and under Republican presidents and Democratic Congresses and Republican Congresses, and we have to take the long view. So the thing about politics is that it always changes very fast.
Well, I think you're exactly right. It does change fast. How many Republicans back when Lyndon Johnson was president and the Democrats dominated Congress, how many Republicans ever felt that they'd take back the House and the Senate and the White House again? I'm sure they felt a lot like us, those of us on the other side of the aisle feel right now. So you're right. It's never too late. Paul, it's awfully good of you to have been on the program today. We appreciate it. The title of your new book, again?
It's called Being Right is Not Enough. Subtitle is What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success.
And where are we going to be able to find that?
Well, in about a month, it'll be in bookstores everywhere, but I think you can pre-order it from places like Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com or Borders.com, those kind of places. So people should get their copies as soon as they can.
Most certainly they should. The last one was a great read, and I'm sure this will be too. Paul Waldman, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Waldman of MediaMatters.com, MediaMatters.org. If you're not a frequent visitor to MediaMatters.org, you certainly ought to be. They are a burr under the saddle of the right-wing radio guys and people on TV. If there's a lie told on by Limbaugh or Hannity or any of them, it's on Media Matters the next day, right along with the audio, the text, the whole business, and they go to great lengths to call them out. And in fact, O'Reilly's so upset about it now that he often mentions MediaMatters.org is a bunch of liars, no good liars. They really got him upset, but they've got him upset because they've told the truth about him. As we know, truth is something Bill O'Reilly knows very little about, and when he finally sees it, it bothers him. It bothers him a whole lot. So, MediaMatters.org. Do see that one. You'll like it, I guarantee. We're going to stop for a break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Disturbing visions of flat-covered coffins each day. United we stand while they're warring our future away. The spin doctors dance while a young man continue to die. All for the sake of the corporate American pie. It's a conspiracy of silence. It's breaking us down. The conspiracy of silence. The truth won't be found. The president seems to have dangerous thoughts in his head. His warm-minded handlers are pushing him over the edge. Protecting the interests of all their industrial friends. The sins of the father repeating all over again. It's a conspiracy of silence that's taking us down. The conspiracy of silence. The truth can't be found. We'll justify all of your unjustifiable wars. It's a conspiracy. It's time we demanded they answer the questions they died. Them return to us all of our freedoms they've robbed. The seeds of Big Brother have started to take root and spread. If we don't rise up, we'll find out democracy's dead. It's a conspiracy of silence that's keeping us down. The conspiracy of silence. The truth can't be found. That's a conspiracy of silence. It's tearing us down. The conspiracy of silence.
And we're back. Glad to have you along with us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. I was just reading a little note that Ken Melman sent out to all of his Republican friends. Interesting to read this. Of course, it said, I need you to make an urgent contribution to help us win this fight. I don't think I'll be, having gotten this letter myself, I don't think I'll be sending a contribution, Ken. I'm sorry. But it says, Democratic leaders talk of censure and impeachment isn't about the law or the president doing anything wrong. It's about the fact that Democrat leaders don't want America to fight the war on terror with every tool in our article, in our arsenal. Well, well, well. There we go again. Mr. Melman saying that the Democrats don't want to fight the war on terror. Want to handcuff all of our military so that they won't do anything about it. And he goes on to say, and what happens if we stand on the sidelines and give the likes of Russ Feingold, John Kerry, and John Conyers control of Congress? Here's what the Wall Street Journal says, and I quote, in fact, our guess is that censure would be the least of it. The real debate in Democratic circles would be whether to pass articles of impeachment. Everyone should understand that censure and impeachment are important, and so far the only part of the left's agenda, the next Congress. Well, that's not the only part of the agenda coming up, I can assure you that, Mr. Melman. But I think you're absolutely right to fear impeachment and censure. I think you're absolutely right to. There's been 31 House Democrats calling for a committee to look into impeachment. John Conyers, the one's kind of leading. John's got guts. Dick Durbin, he failed to rule out impeachment if the Democrats retake Congress. And Tom Harkin of Iowa is talking about high crimes and misdemeanors. So Mr. Melman is right about one thing. There's some truth there. There are some people after Mr. Bush's political scalp. There's little question of that. And why wouldn't they be after all that's taken place these last 5 years? I looked for another time 5 years when things have been, you know, looking so down for America. I think I had to go back to Herbert Hoover. That's about how far you have to go back. It's just not a happy time right now. That's for sure. I remember the Vietnam War so well. And that was not a happy time, and this is starting to look a little bit like it. But here we have, hey, by the way, 866-546-5254. We hope you'll join us on the program this afternoon. Sure, love to get your phone calls. They've been talking about democracy that we're spreading. Democracy they were spreading all throughout the Middle East. They want to plant the seed of democracy. How many of you saw this? I know everybody's seen it by now, the story about the Muslim guy in Afghanistan turning to Christianity. And I didn't know he'd done it so long ago. He did it about 16 years ago. They just now found out that he did. He changed over to being a Christian. And the mullahs over there aren't too happy about it. They demanded Thursday that an Afghan man on trial for converting from Islam to Christianity be executed. Cleric Abdul Rayolf says, rejecting Islam is insulting God. We will not allow God to be humiliated. This man must die, said Rayolf, who, by the way, is considered a moderate. Hamidullah, chief cleric at the Hajj Mosque, said he is not crazy. He went in front of the media and confessed to being a Christian. The government is scared of the international community, but the people will kill him if he is free. That drew agreement from Cleric Abdul Rayolf, a member of the country's main Islamic organization, the Afghan Ulama Council, said the government is playing games. The people will not be fooled. Cut off his head. We will call on the people to pull him into pieces so there's nothing left. He said the only way for Rahman to survive would be to go into exile. But at the Hosseinia Mosque, one of the largest Shiite places of worship in Kabul, said Mir Hossein Nasri, I'm killing that name, said, he said Rahman must be barred from leaving the country. If he's allowed to live in the West, then others will claim to be Christians, so they can too, he said. He must be hanged. The cleric said they were angry with the United States and other countries for pushing for Rahman's freedom. And Hamidullah warned that if the government frees Rahman, the government will lose the support of the people. What sort of democracy would it be if the government ignored the will of the people? So I don't know. I know the government, our government's trying to interfere in that to stop this guy from getting executed. Imagine how that looks. Okay, if you're the head of Karzai, the head of Afghanistan right now, your people are looking at you like you're a puppet for George Bush. So you dare not, if you're going to stay in the good graces of your people, you cannot acquiesce to the demands of George Bush in this, or you're going to look like a fool to your people. George Bush, if he doesn't get this guy saved from getting his head cut off, he's going to look like a fool to our people. What happens here? It's interesting. It's going to be going to be very interesting. That's for sure. The saga of this man. Something will happen soon, though. They don't drag things out over there all that long, I don't think, like we do here in this country. Got a nice, well, I'll read that a little bit later. Got a nice note from a couple of people, from Pam Sandquist. She's Strandquist. I'll get the name sooner. She says, "Hi, guys. Yesterday's show was wonderful, and I wanted you to know that despite the fact that I generally tune in, and I'll just say it, to another program this time of day, you have me snagged once again." She's in Montana. So, Pamela, it's nice to hear from you up in Montana. We love up in love it up in Montana, especially up, well, I love Montana, period. Kalispell and Missoula and all up through there. Beautiful valley, beautiful lakes, beautiful mountains. Browning, what a wonderful place. The Going to the Sun Road and the Glacier National Park. There's no more majestic place in the United States than the Glacier National Park. Too bad everybody doesn't get to see that. I actually took a motorcycle trip up through there many, many years ago, and it was one of the highlights of my life, going through over from Glacier Park on up to Waterton Glacier Park, which is across the border. They call it Waterton Glacier in Canada. Then on up through the Athabasca Glacier and up to Banff and Jasper and on up to Alaska. A very, very beautiful trip. So, Pam, it's nice to hear from you, and I know things are nice out in Big Sky country in Montana today. Seems like the sky's mostly blue there, too, like it is here in Florida. 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you if you've got a question or comment about anything we have to say here today. We hope you'll let us know about it. I got a letter from Tosh Kuhn. It said, "I thought you might be able to use this letter this weekend, use this letter, period. This weekend, I plan to send and email it, if I can pull it off, to every Democratic senator. This email is legitimate. I got a copy in my inbox, and the letter says, 'Dear Democratic Senator, as we patriotic progressives implore our Democratic senators to act as the loyal opposition and stand with Senator Feingold, many of you are unwilling to risk the wrath of your conservative or neoconservative constituents. There appears to be a group of Democrats, political professionals and others, Democrats who seem afraid of the Bush political machine, or crime family, as some call it, and imply that not standing with Senator Feingold will keep the GOP from attacking. As the following letter from RNC Chairman Ken Melman clearly shows, these Democrats are wrong. Shirking your responsibility to hold President Bush accountable for his actions will not keep the RNC from illicitly attacking Democrats, or at least using this alleged plot to raise money. If the GOP is going to claim you're a part of a nasty partisan Democratic plot to shame the president, regardless of the obvious facts, including the malleability of the FISA court, you might as well be part of the plot, as they claim you are anyway. Please act like the loyal opposition we Democrats deserve. Just in case you doubt me, here's a copy of the email. Respectfully, Tosh Kuhn." And he's the one to send us some of the stuff from Ken Melman. So Republicans are worried. I don't think there's any question that they're very, very worried about the midterm elections and what may happen there. What is going to happen there? Are you going to go out and work for change? Are all of you listening today working within the party in one way or another to help change things around? You know you can do it. The area where I live, I just have to tell you a short story. About 3 years ago, I was asked to go speak at a local Democrat club here. And, you know, I was honored to go do it and so forth, and I did. I went and I talked to them. They met in a very small room at a rec center someplace, and there were about 25 people there. Since that time, that club has grown and grown and grown. This is one of the benefits of George Bush being president, I guess, until it's a rockin' sockin', great Democratic club, probably right at the biggest or next to the biggest in all of Florida. Here in Southwest Florida, where it's definitely Republican hell. So that's an interesting thing, that people are out there working. They are out there working very, very hard. So keep that in mind. Always keep that in mind. It's never over. And we've got a great job, a great chance of taking them, taking back the House. Well, it's about the top of the hour for news time. I'm going to turn it over to Ryan right now. Ryan, take it away.
Thank you, Guy. And for your news today, I'm Ryan Riles, updating you on events in Iraq. A deadly day today, yesterday, as 29 Iraqis were killed in mostly sectarian violence throughout the country. Among the many attacks throughout the war-ravaged nation, a bombing outside a Sunni Muslim mosque in northeast Baghdad killed 5 and injured 15 worshippers. And west of Baghdad, gunmen and vehicles killed 3 policemen and another 3 power station workers as they were headed out to their jobs. Elsewhere, U.S. and Iraqi forces are said to have swept the oil-rich region of Kirkuk, capturing dozens of insurgents. Around the nation and world, a new report out today by the Pentagon is claiming that Russians gave Saddam Hussein intelligence on U.S. battle plans and troop movements for the opening days of the war in Iraq in 2003. The unclassified report does not give any specific details of what was leaked by the Russians to Saddam, nor does it assess the value of the information leaked. A classified version of the report, titled Iraqi Perspectives Project, is not being released to the public. And protests have broken out nationwide recently in opposition to new legislation in Congress that would make, amongst other things, being an illegal immigrant in our country a felony. Thousands turned out in a protest in Milwaukee in what was billed as a Day Without Latinos protest in opposition to the legislation. In Phoenix, the protesters numbered nearly 10,000 as they marched down a major thoroughfare in downtown Phoenix, blocking off traffic. And in Los Angeles, hundreds of students walked out of their classrooms in support of their opposition to the legislation. Also being considered on the legislation is to make it a felony for employers to hire illegals and to build a fence along roughly one-third of the Mexican border with the United States. New developments in the case reported yesterday of the murdered Tennessee pastor. Mary Winkler, the murdered pastor's wife, is being charged with first-degree murder in his death, say Tennessee authorities today. Authorities say Ms. Winkler was a suspect from the beginning and that her and her 3 children were picked up in Orange Beach, Alabama, yesterday evening after an Amber Alert was issued for her children. In Selmer, Tennessee, where Pastor Winkler held his congregation, citizens are in shock. Known by the town of almost 4,600 to be charismatic in his sermons, the former mayor of Selmer, Jimmy Whittington, was quoted as saying, "They were a nice family who blended in well with the community." South El Monte, California, a homemade bomb was discovered in the back seat of a car pulled over for speeding this morning. Several businesses in the area of the traffic stop had to be evacuated until the bomb was defused. At this hour, the name of the driver is being withheld while they are investigating the incident. And in New York, police rescued a baby after an apparent murder-suicide attempt failed. 32-year-old Charles Walker jumped into frigid waters yesterday with his infant son after stabbing his girlfriend. Police were unable to save Walker, who was submerged for more than 10 minutes. The girlfriend and the baby are in stable condition at this time at an area hospital. On to your business news. Some bad news for homeowners. New home sales dropped 10.5% last month, cooling off to their lowest point in 9 years. This is the 4th month in a row that the median price of a new home has dropped, providing even more reason to believe that our once-hot home real estate market is slowing down. On to the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was posting slight gains just before the closing bell this afternoon, up 15 to 11,285. The NASDAQ was up 11 to 2311, and the S&P 500 was up slightly to 1303. On to your weather at this hour. Washington, D.C. is 52 degrees with increasing clouds and a chance of rain. Same goes for Philadelphia and New York, on and off rain showers at 46. Boston, 44 with rain changing over to snow later this evening. Detroit and Chicago are at a cool 37 degrees with snow and continuing throughout the evening with more snow showers. 71 and mostly sunny skies in Los Angeles, scattered rain and showers with 54 in San Francisco, 57 and clear skies in Houston, overcast in Seattle and 49, and high atop the Truth in Broadcasting building, the home of the Guy James Show, it's 73 degrees under mostly sunny skies. And now back to Guy James and the Guy James Show.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes, back with you at, 5 minutes and 42 seconds after the hour of 4 o'clock here in Eastern Time in Southwest Florida. Happy to have you with us today. My, you are listening intently today. I hear so hearing from so many of you during the program today, but yet so few of you are picking up the telephone today. I wonder why that is. I wish I knew what causes people to call or not call. Interesting. This will always be something interesting to me. You know, I don't want to belabor the point, although I do think about it day and night, and I think many do about this war. What a waste it's been, a waste of treasure, a waste of American lives, most of all. It's something that's put the American, it's just put America into a mess. It's a cauldron here now. People are turning against each other because of political decisions, because of bad political decisions that have been made. There's never a good way to go to war, but there is a right way and there's a wrong way. And words like reluctant, cautious, and maybe deliberate come to mind, even sad. And war should always be the last possible resort. The nation should absolutely shudder at the thought of going to war. It's people, you know, actually wary and afraid of the consequences. But was America wary, truly wary and afraid of the consequences of this war? Didn't you see all that braggadocio coming forth by the radical right-wingers? Yeah, let's go there and kick their ass. Let's do that. You know, I think Abraham Lincoln summed it up in his second inaugural address. I was reading that the other day, and I wrote down a quote of it. He's talking about war, and I quote, "All dreaded it, all sought to avert it. While the inaugural address was being delivered from this place, devoted together to saving the Union without war, urgent agents were in the city seeking to destroy it without war, seeking to dissolve the Union and divide effects by negotiation. Both parties deprecated war, but one of them would make war rather than let the nation survive, and the other would accept war rather than let it perish. And the war came." The words of Abraham Lincoln. Do you think Abraham Lincoln would recognize the morals and ethics and values of today's Republican Party? I don't think he would recognize the party whatsoever. And I believe the days of going to war for glory and pride were over after, let's face it, after the horrors of World War I, and if not then, most certainly after Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But this group of cowards in the White House right now came into power absolutely thirsting for war. I think we all know that. And Bush sold such a big lie to Helen Thomas the day before yesterday when he said he hadn't planned on going to war. That was just an out-and-out lie. They were primed, they were ready, they were going to pounce on Iraq at the drop of a hat. The immense profits to be made and the political power over the Democrats that they'd draw from the war were absolutely irresistible to them. And so, to accomplish their mission, they threw ethics and morality, honesty, and integrity, threw it to the wind. They pushed, they shoved, they cajoled, they tilted the truth. They stretched the truth. They manufactured their own truth until the truth couldn't be told from fiction anymore. Bush didn't even try to prove his case for war. Instead, he destroyed the means by which such sobering decisions usually are made. His whole life's been a lie. His whole life's been a failure. But it's been somehow rewritten into a success story by the likes of Karl Rove. We need to find the truth. This nation is too valuable to not just to us,
but to all of humanity to be destroyed by this Texas tin horn quasi-dictator. And that's the way he sees himself. I heard somebody, some comedian the other day, talking about blame. If they want to place blame on somebody, they ought to push the blame off onto Barbara Bush. And I guess I have to agree. If it weren't but for Barbara Bush, we wouldn't have this mess, right? I see on the news where I dug out an article where Barbara Bush donated some money to the Bush-Clinton-Katrina Fund. But she wasn't well enough off just to donate some money to the fund. She had to stipulate where the money was going to. And it seems her boy Neil is involved in this educational software deal. And she stipulated that the money had to be spent on that. Oh, yes. Had to be spent on that. They never get tired of it. The Bush family doesn't. Neil Bush, you know, a disgrace to any other family. He's looked at upon as a success by the Bush people that love the Bushes. He's a success. He would be an absolute disgrace in most other families. Of course, it was Babs Bush. I'm trying to think what it was she said about, she couldn't waste her beautiful mind. Remember that one when she was asked about the deaths and the war? And she said she couldn't waste her beautiful mind by thinking about the dead bodies of American soldiers. Quite a woman, Barbara Bush. And then when she went down to the Astrodome in Houston after Katrina, she looked around and then she was being interviewed. She's actually, you know, some of these people got it. This is better than they've ever had it. I'm paraphrasing there now. I can't think of the exact words, but she made another ridiculous quote. And I see we haven't heard another word from her since. I think Papa Bush must have finally gotten a hold of her and says, woman, don't open your mouth anymore. Because, although I, that's probably an erroneous statement because I think she always wore the pants in that family. I got a note from a good friend of mine, Clarence Sweeney. And Clarence, I hope you're listening. Clarence has got it all figured out, and Clarence always makes a lot of sense. He really does. He makes a lot of sense. And he sent me a note on things that ought to be done in campaign for Congress to awaken Democrats. He says in this letter, stop wasting your time and money on non-priority items. Bush has done plenty wrong. He's not the candidate. You got a point, Clarence. Democrats have by far the best domestic record, but that was yesterday. What are you going to do for me now? He goes on to say Clinton and Gore put their priorities in writing with extensive details outlining pluses and minuses, and it was very easy to evaluate. What are your priorities, he's saying to the Democrats. What will you do for me on campaign finance? How will you get the big money out of it? How will you keep the dollars out of Congress? Boy, do I ever agree with you on that, Clarence. I'm one of these real radicals when it comes to campaign finance. I don't think that we ought to be able to, I don't think you ought to be able to take a dollar from a company. Not a single dollar. Not a dollar from an individual. Nothing. Since we own the airwaves, the public, I think we ought to give them all equal time to state their case on TV and radio and also get the press to agree, the newspapers to give them equal time to state their case, and that's it. No dollars. No dollars whatsoever. Not 5 cents. Absolutely nothing. I've said that for many, many years, but I don't know how that, as long as the trouble is the politicians are in control of that.
You know, Guy, you have no idea how happy I am to hear you say that, because I've believed that myself for a long time. Right now, the one difference between what you say and what I say really is I think you should be allowed to take donations from private citizens. If somebody wants to donate, you know, cap it at a small amount. I worked the numbers out one time for my own benefit to see what they were like, and I agree totally. I think the public airwaves should be free to anybody who gets their name on all 50 ballots. There should be no organized contributions to a campaign fund, and that's it. That would make the playing field absolutely fair. I think it would bring many more people into the voting booths because it would lessen that gap that people feel that they have between, you know, their elected officials and themselves in terms of their power to actually elect them.
Well, the problem I see with that, and of course we see pretty much eye to eye on this subject. If you were allowed to take donations from private individuals, the next thing you know, you would have the guys living down in Port Royal and in Naples, Florida, or in Palm Beach, Florida, or wherever all the fat cats are from. They'd be greasing these guys' palms with private money, and they'd be able to outspend one another. You know, the playing field wouldn't quite get leveled that way because one guy might raise a whole lot more money than another guy. If we eliminated the money completely, there would be no money to keep track of. There would be no abuse at all. Just give them all equal time, equal space, and everything. There'd be nothing to argue about anymore.
Right. The other thing is, as I'm sure you're well aware, I know I am, probably, you know, 70% of campaign funding goes to advertising, and they're forced to outbid each other for the same amount of advertising space that ends up, which, you know, as you and I know, radio stations and television stations have to give what's allowed a PSA segment every day or whatever the contract states, and it's free. But when the Democratic and Republican party committees get that space, the private candidate doesn't. They have to pay for their own airtime. Becomes an extreme expense, especially in November when you're going into a sweeps month like they do sometimes in the elections. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, I agree, and I just think it'd be nothing nicer than take the money out of politics. It's the major thing wrong when you think about it. It always, no matter what you're talking about, it always boils down to the money, just about.
Right. Yeah.
And in politics, nothing. You know, the ludicrous statement last week by Catherine Harris that I'm going to put $10 million of my own money in this campaign. Oh, my God. Why would somebody spend $10 million on a job that pays $160,000 a year, $140,000, whatever it is? You know what that's all about. And damn it, there's Democratic senators in this, too, that have been there, you know, look how many years. And I just don't think our founding fathers ever envisioned that there were going to be professional politicians. I know they didn't.
Yeah, no question about it. As we've talked before, you and I have both read the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, and that argument that says, what would our founding fathers want? Read those two books. Those are the minutes and the notes from the congressional meetings, the constitutional meetings that they had to form our Constitution. And you'll know very plainly what they wanted, what they expected out of our Constitution once it was written.
Well, wouldn't it be great if you could get John Adams and some of these guys that come back today and say, hey, we're going to hire you guys as consultants, and we're going to take you over to the Capitol building, and you're going to talk to each and every congressman and each and every senator, and you're going to go in and say, he says to Ted Kennedy, now, you've been there 30-some years? Oh, no, you're kidding me. No, really.
You need to quit now.
We're going to just – and like I said, I think they made a mistake when they drew things up. I'm not one of these people that thinks the Constitution and everything's infallible. I agree that it should be a living, breathing document, that it can't be left the way it absolutely was in the old days. I just don't think so. I don't think their founding fathers could possibly have thought about hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars going into campaign funds.
Those numbers were...
No,
you weren't even the national budget back then.
They couldn't possibly envision that, and so I just know they'd have a fit. I think when they drew the whole thing up, and I've said this many times, I would only allow one term for the House and one term for the Senate, but I would make the House terms also 6 years and the Senate 6 years. And I know there's some arguments against both of those, but one and done, one term. One term, you can have one of 6 years, and you're out of there. Same way with president. And
well, you know what's funny, guy, is you wouldn't have to have term limits if everybody voted.
Well,
if everybody voted, you wouldn't have to worry about
that's
term
true.
Limits.
But I think we've got enough history under our belt now that we know that's not going to happen.
Well, we hope that it's going to happen, but the odds of it happening are slim and none.
So if they had to get out after one term, there's another thing. I mean, if they had to get out after one term, what would the lobbyists do?
They would have nothing to do. So that's something I would outlaw, too, at the federal levels, lobbyists.
Yeah, this story earlier this week about John Ashcroft, the attorney general. I mean, you know, going back in and starting a lobbying firm, you know, that's just obscene.
Oh, God.
And there's, and don't get me wrong, folks, there's Democrats doing it as well. And I just think it's absolutely wrong. I mean, it's absolutely wrong. We've all read the stories. We've all read the, you know, we all know the Jack Abramoff story right now, what's going on. We know that he bought and sold politicians easily. And the Duke Cunningham story. My God. We have Duke Cunningham getting a Republican congressman from California, a former ace, war ace pilot, getting a little greedy and takes, I don't know, several million dollars worth of bribes from defense contractors because he was on the defense spending board. Anyway, you know he got caught, and you know he got sentenced to prison, and he's got the longest sentence that that any congressman ever got. And so they make this big deal, the IRS and everybody did, about having the sale of his ill-gotten gains yesterday. And, you know, they had promotions everywhere that they're going to sell this, that, and the other thing. And they took in $94,000. That's it. $94,000.
And millions of dollars of whatever he purchased.
Hell, you can go down to Naples, Florida, when they have one of their wine things for charity and raise several million.
Right, yeah.
And they took in $94,000. I don't know whether they sold his Rolls Royce or not. he had one, and he had a yacht. They couldn't have sold the yacht and the Rolls Royce and everything and only got
$94,000. No, no way.
So I thought you'd be out there bidding on that.
Oh, if I had known he had a Rolls Royce, I would have been bidding.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a brand new one. But
I still would have been bidding.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go on with Clarence is probably wondering by now, when are you going to get back to my letter? I'm going to get back to it right now, Clarence. On the things that what are you going to do for me? He's asking the Democrats. Healthcare costs. Do you know that in 2010 they're projected to be 20% of the gross domestic product? 20%? No other nation on earth has healthcare more than 10% of their GDP? Will you get universal health care, that's a single payer like Medicare, which is desired by the majority? Do you not realize this would be a big boost for all businesses? Social Security, what will you do for solvency? He's asking Democrats these questions. Medicare, what will you do to protect it? Medicaid, how will you keep it affordable for states and the military? How will you stop the defense industry's raid on the Treasury and the wealth of our country? Spending. Wow, here's a story. You know, here's a part of it that the Bush people, huge growth in our budget, in our government. Huge. How would you reduce it, Democrats? Deficits. How are you going to balance the budget? Democrats know how to balance a budget. Debt. How are you going to reduce it? And, you know, other things. The inequity in income and wealth. How you do a decent redistribution so that we have a strong middle class again. I'm not talking about welfare here. You know, the immigration. Clarence didn't put that up, but what's the Democratic policy on immigration right now? Huh? Does anybody know? Does anybody know what the Democratic Party, what they plan on doing this fall with immigration? Now, in my mind, illegal immigration is one of the most serious issues we face today, and I see the Democratic Party running to get away from that issue. You ask a lot of them, they won't even address it. Well, you know, I'm doing a lot of studying on that. Mm-hmm. They're running from it, and it's something they ought to be running on. And education, what are the Democrats, what do they want to do? And I think... you know, Clarence is a political historian, and he knows these things, and he's seen this all happen before, the Democratic Party going into an election without a clear agenda. And, yes, you know, we talk a lot on this program about getting rid of Mr. Bush as our president, or we don't like Mr. Bush as our president, or we don't like Dick Cheney as the vice president. I don't like much anything to do with this administration. I think most of you agree with me on that now. But the fact is, Bush isn't running anymore, and that's exactly right. And we need, as Democrats, as liberals, progressives, whatever you call yourself, if you're on the opposite side of the aisle as these neocons, we've got to get our message out.
And so far, and I know we're not deep into the election season yet, but wouldn't this be the time for candidates, the DNC, whoever, the hierarchy of our party to start getting the message out, hey, we stand for this on immigration, we stand for this on education, we stand for this on health care. Wouldn't this be the time to kind of get a leg up on these Republicans? Gosh, I think it would. I don't know. I don't know why the party doesn't do that, except I will say that there are too many old-timers in the party that want to do things, you know, they want to keep it as the status quo. And that's wrong, and that hurts the Democratic Party. And if they insist upon that again, if they insist upon letting the status quo rule this election that's coming up once again, the results are not going to be pretty. That's a fact. I see it all the time. I know a lot of people who are DNC members, and I know when they go to Washington to the meetings, or Arizona, the last one, and wherever they go and have their meetings, the state meetings, the national meetings, they come back with a bunch of BS from the national party, and all it amounts to is how to get the money from the grassroots, how to fleece the grassroots and get the money up into Washington. That's the gist of it. That is absolutely the gist of it. And I know some people who are trying to get grassroots Republicans or Democrats in the state of Florida, trying to get them together, trying to get them to form a cohesive force, a powerful force of Democrats all over the state of Florida, so that they can put some heat on the national party and say, hey, we're not gonna play ball with you if you're going to play by the old rules. We're a battleground state. We're important. You're going to listen to us for a change, which is the way it ought to be. It's absolutely the way it ought to be. The power from the Democratic Party should not be from the top down. It should be from the bottom up. It's the only way it can work right. 866-546-5254. I hope you'll give us a call. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes.
I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. Imperial war is a dirty game. I don't want to be a soldier. Steal some other people's wealth, invade their homes and their nation. This is how I've always felt. I call upon the world's millions. No more war in our name. Stop this madness, stop the killing, stop the suffering and the pain. I don't want to be a soldier, murder children in foreign lands, bomb and terrorize all those families. So for peace, I'll take my stand. Call upon the world's killing. Stop the suffering and the pain. So
I don't want
to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. George Bush's war is a dirty game. George Bush's war is a dirty game.
Ah, yes, it is a dirty game. You're listening to The Guy James Show at www.theguyjamesshow.com. Got a note from John over in Fort Myers, and I'm glad, John, that he sent me a note the other day that he couldn't get the show on the stream, but I think he's figured it out. So I can tell from his email that he's figured it out, and that's a good thing. Glad to have you along with us, John. Many of our listeners, when we were on local radio, that we've heard from, and it's awfully nice. We've heard this week from people from, I talked to you about the gentleman from Scotland, Patrick from Scotland, from Germany, from Spain, from New Zealand, from South Korea, from, you know, all over the place. And that's one of the interesting things about internet radio. You just never know where it is that people are listening from, and that makes it just fascinating. It really does. Makes it fascinating for me. 866-546-5254. We'd like to hear from you today, and we wanted to kind of go into a few things here that of what is a Republican nowadays, and I took a good long look at that. And I've said many, many times that this group here that we have nowadays are not Republicans, that they're something other. And I've been really seeking an adequate definition of today's Republicans, not Barry Goldwater or Nelson Rockefeller Republicans or Dwight Eisenhower Republicans, but today's Republicans. And I spell that with a small r. When you take into account all that's happened these last 5 years of this woe-begotten administration, you can come to no other conclusion than that those who willingly put Bush into office are different, really different. I don't want to impugn anybody, but you know, kind of subhuman in a way. For what kind of a person? Really think about this. I mean, I know the neocons and the Republicans. They went ballistic over Bill Clinton getting a Hummer, but they feel no remorse whatsoever over the mounting pile of corpses, of crimes, of graft, of cronyism, of lies and treason carried out in right front of their noses by those at the very top of this government. I know personally, and many of my friends on the left, I know you all know people personally, that just railed against Bill Clinton for this deal with Monica Lewinsky, and yet they're willing to let this whole business, this whole river of slime that pervades the Bush administration, just forget about it. I find that so interesting. I really do. I have tried and tried and tried to figure that out. What is it? What is it? Are people so stubborn that they just can't admit they were wrong? I mean, nobody likes to admit they're wrong. I know I don't. It's you're wrong about something. I mean, you were maybe a little bit stupid, a little bit foolish, wrong. Nobody likes to admit it, but, you know, the reality is, sooner or later, you've got to admit it. You admit it to yourself, you ought to admit it to your your fellow human beings, but why is it? Why is it that, you know, I have people that send the hate mail and all that, and they're hell-bent on sticking with this no matter what. And you know, you dissect today's typical Republican voter, and you get a really weird cocktail consisting of two parts retard, one part bigot, and you pour it over bad religion and serve it with
a sight of Rush Limbaugh and keep drinking until you're actually stupid enough to believe a single word that this Bush administration says. I heard Limbaugh today, by the way, going past the dial. You know, what is he up to today? How many of you saw that Gonzaga basketball game last night? They were up by 17 points in the second half and lost the game. And one of the stars for Gonzaga, right in the middle of the floor when the game ended, he was standing near half court, and he literally just collapsed on the floor and was bawling his eyes out. And Limbaugh was just having a hoot over that, just thought that was the most disgraceful, awful thing he ever saw, that this guy was heartbroken that his, number one, his college, he lost his game in the NCAA tournament, and also that his college career is over with. But Limbaugh just couldn't understand that. Did you see that, Ryan?
Yeah, I sure did. And if you, that player I'm familiar with, as I am something of a sports fanatic, his last name is Morrison. He's a diabetic. He takes insulin shots during the game. He's a very emotional kid. He's in his senior year. And that just goes to show you the sort of lack of true moral value that some of these far-right proponents, as you call them, neocons, which I'm learning is very fitting for people like Rush Limbaugh. They just don't have any real morals or sense of worth for something beyond their own selfish gains.
Really no compassion for that kid at all. Instead, he just had a good hoo-ha over it. He was just laughing and carrying on and just, you know, he just couldn't get over this.
That's sad.
Said it wasn't manly.
It must have been one of his days when he didn't have his drugs or something today, I guess.
I guess so. Mm. I thought it was disgraceful. But, you know, you shouldn't believe a single word these people say, especially Pills Limbaugh. You don't know whether he's stoned or what. You can yell that that 2 and 2 is 5 all you want to, but eventually you're going to be forced to face the incontrovertible proof that you're just dead wrong. And you know what gives you the guts to just keep running Wile E. Coyote further and further off the cliff? I mean, that's what it is. And, of course, what I'm getting to here is that today's Republican voters have a radically, radically different definition of what's right and wrong than the rest of us. I mean, it's clear-cut. It's black and white. And for those of you who like to split hairs, let's stipulate that right and wrong and true and false are not the same things. But with regard to the GOP value system, I'd really argue that one can and often does proxy for the other. You have to understand this modern-day Republican Party is not a party of individualists. They're a party of slaves. Now, don't laugh. Stick with me on this. They really are a party of slaves. Despite all of their gunslinging pap and Ronnie Reagan and G.W. Bush cowboy rhetoric, they are prone to act in the exact opposite manner of their so-called foundational principles. And in the final analysis, they really are a bunch of slaves absolutely doing what they're told, toeing the party line. And this is the weird part, liking it. They don't know how to function on their own. They like order. They like discipline. They like big guns and even bigger Bibles. And their idea of patriotism is how well they can toe the party line, how deeply they can bow to their dear leader. And without their masters telling them what to think, today's Republican is lost and absolutely adrift at sea, and there is no fate more terrifying to them, really, when you think about it, than to be cast adrift and confused with, you know, with no whip hand to kiss or no boot to lick. And it's not that they just hate facts or science or reality per se, it's that they're just chattel. And you stop and think about it. The measure of a good dog is not whether it can do fancy tricks, it's how blindly faithful it is. And if the dear leader says facts are good on Monday, and the facts like the yellow cake fiasco in Niger support the dear leader, then all hail the facts. That's just the way it is. But when the facts turn out to be lies on Tuesday, and dear Bushy's story turns out to have been pure bullshit, then the facts are bad, and people who repeat them are traitors. And never once in their minds do they even notice And I wonder about this constantly. Don't they ever notice the glaring contradictions? Because never once did they ever care in the slightest about the facts themselves. They don't care about the facts. To them, being right has nothing to do with the facts at all. To them, right is only what they deem it to be, and right can turn like a pack of Rottweilers on a mean drunk on anyone, even friends who rock the boat in the slightest. Which, by the way, is why I believe that Republicans actually hate this country and are bent upon destroying it as we know it. They want to destroy the government as we know it. Guys like Grover Norquist, he said that. He wants to shrink it down small enough to where they can drown it in a bathtub. And Grover Norquist is respected highly because he's the tax cut king of the Republican Party. And they don't like it because America is a dream that was founded on dissent. And there's nobody that hates dissent or has ever hated dissent more than this Republican Party that's in power right now. You know, dissent is asking hard questions of those who make decisions for the country. Dissent is not shutting up. Dissent is demanding that our civil servants be accountable to you and me. And in a real democracy, the citizen is supreme. We should grab government by the neck and insist that they cough up the truth, whether they be Democrats or Republicans. I don't like hearing a lie or a bunch of crap from a Democrat anymore, and I like hearing it out of a Republican. This is the God-given, natural-born right of every single American. People who loathe dissent do not deserve to call themselves American, and there's nobody that has ever loathed dissent more than this Bush administration right now. They've decided to quell dissent no matter where it's come. These free speech zones that they have when the protesters, they herd them behind a fence 5 miles away from wherever the action's going on. That is wrong. It is wrong. It is wrong. It's un-American. I don't care how you cut it. It is un-American to do that. This country was founded on dissent. Absolutely it was. That's the one thing this country was founded on, was dissent. Because the people of this country no longer wanted to go along with King George. They no longer wanted one class of people to tell them that they weren't as good as another. And they said, this is wrong. And they came to this country to get away from the oppression of King George. It was dissent. All the people that are very religious like to say this country was founded on God. It was founded on this and fallen on. That's all well and good. But mostly this country was founded on dissent. I don't care how you cut it. That's how it comes down. That is absolutely what it comes down to. And I'll say it again. People who loathe dissent do absolutely not deserve to call themselves Americans. People who smear dissenters do not deserve to call themselves American. People who value a slave's loyalty over a citizen's demand for the truth are an embarrassment to real Americans. People who would burn the nation down over lies and semen stains on one president's lover's dress and yet shrug off and ignore an ocean of innocent blood on another president's hand have no business calling themselves Americans. Because anyone who calls willing blindness and then the protecting of traitors of virtue and clarity and honesty a sin is not American. They're a Republican. They're today's Republicans. I don't want to condemn everybody that calls themselves a Republican, because I know a lot of Republicans right now who are absolutely heart sick over what has happened to their party. They see the tack that they've taken right now. They know what's happened to this party of theirs. It's being destroyed from the inside out. It's being destroyed by a bunch of people who don't give a damn about the Republican Party. They don't give a damn about the average American. All they care about is further enriching and further empowering themselves and their friends, and further distancing themselves from the working class, the low class. Folks, we're headed right back to where we were with King George. We've got the royalty, the Bush and the Cheneys. And then we've got the aristocracy. The aristocracy sitting on Port Royal down in Naples, Florida, with homes that start at $5 million on up. And many places like that, compounds like that in this nation. I don't know what the word is. I don't begrudge these people their wealth. I don't at all. Many of them made it honestly and in a proper way, and more power to them. That's what this country's all about, and it's given them the opportunity to do that. But along with the opportunity to make millions and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars, along with that comes the responsibility to the rest of society. A bigger responsibility to the rest of society, because if you have made more, you owe more. That's a family value. You are more beholden to your fellow citizens. If you've been lucky enough, prosperous enough to have made a fortune in your lifetime, you owe more. You need to give back more. And I don't see that. I don't see that attitude in this neocon society of Republicans that we have today. I respected Barry Goldwater. I respected Nelson Rockefeller. I respected Dwight Eisenhower. I didn't agree with everything they had to say, but they were men who could be respected. They were men, if they told you something, you could take it to the bank. They were honest. Not like these people today. I don't know what's in store for this nation. I really don't know what's in store for this nation if these people keep on going. I really don't. Going to take a break. We'll be right back. Ah, yes, you ought to see the email. You just ought to see it that we get every week when we talk about the Republicans the way we do. But someone's got to say it, and every week I get many, many nasty emails from right-wing extremists who claim that we on the left are the angry ones. Let me say right off that, yes, indeed, I am angry.
And it's my position that if you're not angry about the direction this country's headed, you're not a patriotic American. Absolutely not. And it's apparent that this nation's been conquered, not by some outside force, but from within. Our country's been captured by those who traffic in hatred and fear and bigotry, and has been taken over by the war profiteers and the rich and the greedy. And that's hardly what the founders of this great nation envisioned. They really did see a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, but this current administration has long since forgotten those great words. And I admit that at times I've had feelings of absolute hopelessness. But upon further reflection, I pull back from that despair, and I remember the past, the good and glorious past of what we, the Democratic Party, the liberals, the progressive, what we've stood for, and what we have accomplished over the life of the United States of America. You see, we all need to realize that we have history on our side, for it's we are the ones who led this nation in progress. It's we who are the inheritors of a great, proud past, and it's we who have forever engraved the best and brightest moments into our American history. We have always been at the forefront of the struggle for what's right and good for this land we love, and oh yes, the right-wing extremists claim to be the real America, but it's we who are the keepers of freedom and the light of Lady Liberty. The extremists constantly wrap themselves in the flag, but it's always been we who have fought for the freedoms that flag represents. It's they who have twisted the Constitution, but it's we who have made it straight again. Oh, we've seen these dark moments before. All of you old enough to remember Vietnam and the great fight for civil rights in our country, the slavery of the cotton fields in the South, the burning crosses and the hanging trees of the Ku Klux Klan, and the misery of the Great Depression, the fight for equal rights for women, the Nazis, Joe McCarthy. But we've conquered all those blights upon this nation because we have never weakened, we have never wavered, and we have never surrendered, and we never will. We have been the ones who overcame these obstacles. It's we who have shared the vision and faith of great men and women like Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, Rosa Parks, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, John Kennedy, and scores of others. We're the conscience of this nation. We're the ones who pull her back from the confusion, from the abyss, time after time. We recognize what's right and what's good for the country, for we're the thinkers, the visionaries, the believers in this country and in mankind. My message in all of this is that we should never, never allow ourselves to sink too low with the despair over the current events, because we know we'll eventually triumph over this group of extremists who have temporarily hijacked this country. We know that because absolutely, positively, history is on our side. You can take that to the bank. History has always been on our side in that regard. You stop and think of the great things that the progressive and liberals and Democrats have done for this country over the years. Think about it. The CCC back when Roosevelt's time, I mean, that helped pull this nation out of depression. The Unemployment Relief Act. The National Industrial Recovery Act, the National Housing Act, the Federal Communications Act, the National Labor Relations Board, the Fair Labor Standards Act, the Social Security Act, the GI Bill of Rights, the Tennessee Valley Power Authority, the Rural Electrification Act, the Full Employment Act, the Permanent School Lunch Program, the integration of armed forces, for God's sake, Veterans Emergency Housing Act, the Public Health Service Act, the National Housing Act, the Marshall Plan, the Peace Corps, the Aid to Dependent Children Program, the SBA, the Consumer Drug Protection Laws, Equal Pay Act, Manpower Development. How many of these do you have to list that Democrats did before you realize that it was the Democrats that have taken the Republicans dragging and streaming into the modern era? They would have stayed back in the times of who knows, the 1700s, I think. They often act like that.
I've got a list in front of me here, way too long to read. There's about 79 different things on here, the things Democrats have done for this country. I can't think of very many the Republican Party's ever done. All the Republican Party's ever done is want to destroy the American government. They admit it. They do admit it. I guess maybe that's the start to recovery. I don't know for sure. 866-546-5254. I'm beginning to think we had a problem with the phones today. I'm going to have to check that out when it's all over. If we did, I sincerely apologize. It's good to hear your voice during the program as well. I've done a lot of talking today. There's a lot to say right now. There really is. We have somehow got to get the American public interested in these elections coming up. We really need to get the public to take this seriously this year, because it's going to be a very, very, very serious election year. If the Democrats can't take the House back this year, I think we're in for a long, long, as they like to say, hard slog. I think we're headed down a slippery slope that if we don't take the House back this year, we just might not recover from it for a while. But on the hopeful side, I think a lot of Americans have come to realize these past few months that they were wrong in electing this group. They've realized that